Cheers to a great day and this ice-cold Corona.
You know what would make this day even better? My grandma's carne asada.
Throw in some music.
We can watch the game. Or we could keep it simple.
Corona, la vida más fina. Get your Corona at ordercorona.com. Relax responsibly. Corona Extra Beer, imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Download the White Castle app and join Craver Nation Rewards today. When you're part of Craver Nation Rewards, you get the VIP treatment. Enjoy perks like birthday freebies, earn points on every dollar you spend, and complete quests to level up and unlock rewards like exclusive deals, free food, and more. New members enjoy $5 off your first order in the app. White Castle. Follow your crave. See app for details.
Football on Off the Ball.
It's the producers in football form. If you're really going to mess up a football club, how could you do it better than this? I just don't think you could.
Join in the obsession.
Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Six Nations
on Off the Ball.
With Bank of Ireland, a proud sponsor of Irish rugby. Never stop competing.
So the Women's Six Nations gets up and running this weekend, and Ireland's campaign starts against France at Kingspan Stadium on Saturday, where kickoff is at 1 p.m. We have former Munster and Ireland player Fiona Hayes with us on the line. Evening, Fiona.
Hey, Owen, how are you?
And Anna Capeless is with us from La Rochelle as well. Anna, how are you doing?
Good now. How are things?
Very well. Can't complain. So it's been a while since we've seen Ireland play since last autumn. There is this overarching feeling that they left that on a high, and even though they didn't win three games in the Six Nations last year, that almost feels like an expectation this season. And the next question really is, can Ireland go and actually beat France in this year's Six Nations? So straight away that sets the scene for this Saturday, Fiona, as a huge game for this team.
Oh, absolutely, Owen. It's huge. It's something I even flagged last year when I was looking at this game, and especially after watching the team in the WXV and that 150th anniversary game against Australia. I just got an excitement about what's building amongst this group. So certainly England probably too far away at the minute. Watching France in that WXV tournament also, I wasn't that impressed with them. And, you know, even in chatting to the girls, I think they trained with them a couple of times as well pre that tournament. They would have said they went toe for toe in some of those competitive kind of internal games that you might have. So it's a game I flagged that this Irish squad is constantly building and definitely can win. Now, I did look at the team that France have sent out, and it's probably the most possible strongest team that you could imagine, especially that pack in particular looks really good. Menage at 8 isn't there, but other than that, I think it speaks for itself. But certainly watching them, it's the first time day one of the Six Nations own, and I'm super excited that we could be starting it on a win.
Yeah, the fact that they trained with each other around WXV last year is a really interesting wrinkle to this, Anna.
It is, yeah, and it's kind of strange, I suppose, when you have Six Nations teams training together like that when they meet every year. But that relationship is kind of built up through the sevens. I know, kind of going back along, the sevens would have worked together a lot. We would have spent time in Marcoussi, like we've done, camps there and stuff. So there is that relationship there. It's just a funny one then when it comes to game time, like how close do you hold your cards to your chest? But like when we talk about the WXV and like what's happened since the last fixture, you know, last year in Le Mans, like it was a huge performance from France, and it looked good from Ireland, but France in the end, like they put Ireland away easily. But the difference between, you know, what's gone on since last time is that they both went to WXV1, and Ireland were able to achieve what France couldn't. And Ireland beat the Black Ferns and France couldn't. And if I was in, you know, France's boots coming back to Ireland now, I think France are a lot more afraid of Ireland than Ireland are of France. And, you know, Kingspan, Belfast is becoming, you know, a fortress for these big results for this Irish team. And you're right, like the question is, you know, the three games, that's been like the goal for the last few years now. Can they come third? Is this finally the year now where they can beat France? And I agree with Fiona, England's too far away, but is this the one? And I think this is the biggest chance we've had since 2017 to beat this French team.
So their WXV results compared to Ireland, obviously there was that magnificent win for Ireland against the Black Ferns. New Zealand beat France 39 points to 14. And then even if you look at the results against Canada, for example, Canada beat Ireland 21 points to 8 and they beat France 46 points to 24. I don't think it is green-tinted goggles, Anna, to suggest that they're on a fairly similar footing at this point. The result in Le Mans last year is kind of front and centre, and it's not too long since then, but it kind of feels like it is a long time and there's a lot of water under the bridge since that match.
Go ahead, Fiona.
Go for it, Anna.
It's funny because you usually have, you know, this WXV one has added an extra element of speculation, whereas it used to be just once a year and you'd kind of go off how you felt last year and that just might carry over a whole year. When a whole year is, like, let's look at the men's Six Nations. Look at the difference in the Ireland and France game last year and the Ireland and France game this year. You know, when there's a year between things, so much can go on, but you don't have anything to go off. You're kind of speculating. But they both played in the same, they played the same opposition in the WXV one. They didn't get to play each other, but that is... You know, you talk about green tinted glasses. You know, the proof is there that they're in and around the same neck of the woods, to you know, for want of a better phrase.
When it comes to the team sheets, you kind of touched on it there, Fiona. It is a very strong France team that is going to be showing up in Belfast this weekend. Is it noticeably stronger compared to some of the teams that played in WXV? Is it noticeably stronger than the team that played Ireland in the Six Nations last year? Or where does it compare to those two squads?
Yeah, look, there's just in the pack in particular, Owen, I think, you know, I know Menage normally plays eight. She's tried, tested. She's their first, you know, she's probably one of the first names on the team sheet, but I think she has a head injury, so she's not in this. But you look at Medusa Fall, you look at the front row, Pauline Bourdon, Sessou at nine. It's just Arbez at 10. It's a team, I think, that has been underperforming, if I'm honest about it, looking at the individual talent there, watching them even in games. I'll pick the England game last year, Le Crunch as they call it. These players probably underperformed a lot. WXV, they'll be disappointed with that. I thought their attack was static. Even if you look at the stats from the Six Nations last year, I think they were third in overall lineouts. Now, Ireland's percentage was last. I think it was 74 or early 60s. But it's a French team that pride themselves on set piece. It's a French team that would normally pride themselves on attacking flair. And I haven't seen that. And I think on the other side of things, that makes me a little bit nervous as well, because, you know, looking at WXV, looking at last year's Six Nations, I'm saying, yes, this Irish team can obviously go after it. But the big names on that team sheet have the ability to be quite physical. They had the most gain, like, success in their forwards area as well in last year's Six Nations. Ireland, I think, were sixth. So we have a really good kicking game. It's completely evolving. France are the same. They have a number of players. You've got the 9-10 fullback that have a boot on them. That's absolutely brilliant. But it's that pack in particular, when I see those names, those big names, they, in my opinion, haven't performed to what I'd expect from them in the last maybe year. WXV, looking at their international games. So there would want to be a huge shout to come over to Ireland for them to push on. And that makes me a bit nervous. But certainly they have the ability to overpower Ireland. It's now, can Ireland deal with that? Because the confidence on the back of that WXV has got to feed into this group. And certainly Anna spoke about it, you know, if you get that confidence, you get it going, that adds a little bit something. And up in Belfast, as you said, Anna, as well, it's just something that Ireland have now lost, that fear factor, I think, with France, looking at those results. And that's what makes it so exciting.
The Ireland team named earlier on today, and the top line is that Amy Lee Costigan is captain. This is the artist formerly known as Amy Lee Murphy Crowe. Give us the lowdown on the captaincy and her ascension to this role, Fiona.
Yeah, look, she's an unbelievable player. I think I played her one season with Munster a long time ago. So she played a really good season with Munster and she leapt straight into that Sevens programme. And there isn't a person in the country that follows Sevens rugby or follows rugby that wouldn't know her name. She's absolutely outstanding. She's just a talent. Her work rate, her ability to get you out of sticky, sticky situations as well defensively. She's not the biggest player. You know, we look at our wingers and even in the modern game, a lot of the guys, girls are big, strong wingers. Amy Lee is just, she's got that hidden strength, that speed, every aspect of the game. She's worked so hard on in camp. So I think that captaincy, when I look at that from the outside, we know Adele McMahon is on the bench. So obviously Amy Lee is captain. Very unusual as well that you'd hear of a winger being captain. They're pretty far away from that ruck area, but it shows you exactly what type of person she has been in camp, how she's impressed the coach and staff, how every single player that I've ever coached, even at a Munster level, talks about her with such awe. They just are amazed by her. And then when they eventually get all players, or some players, when they eventually get up to that Irish camp, there's nothing but praise on how she goes about her business. So I think it's a reflection on her hard work, her talent, but it's her ability to make young girls feel comfortable, make them excited about the game. And she should be very, very proud. As I said, we didn't see a lot of her with that seven. She's been absolutely superb, but she was back playing that Celtic Cup competition and has just excelled. And it's exciting for her and her family as well, because she absolutely deserves it.
Anna, your thoughts on Amy Lee Costigan?
Yeah, I think it goes to show as well, you know, for years, and this has kind of evolved over time, but for years, managing the, you know, the sevens and the 15s program side by side has proven a bit difficult. It just goes to show like how much like absolute talent and heart and you know, just like doing anything for the green jersey exists on both sides. Because, you know, if there, Amy Lee has been, you know, in the 15 squad now and building more and more 15s time, even though she'd be known as a sevens player. And now she's been given captaincy. Like, that's just an amazing thing that she's been able to bring over into the 15s game. It used to be, you know, the sevens were away, or they'd be going away mid-season, mid-Six Nations, or they'd be missing here and there. So there was never a question of any sevens player being given, you know, the captaincy. But now that this is being World Cup year, we're bringing in our best players, we're, you know, prioritising 15s, it goes to show, like, that's been there all along. Like, and so everything that Fiona said, I agree with, and I'm very excited. I was surprised to see it, maybe for that reason, because I, you know, the winger role, the fact that Adele, and, you know, it looked like Niamh Jones is, you know, she was over at the captain's launch and things. It looked like that was going to happen, especially as well with the absence of Sam Monaghan still. And then to see, you know, that Tricky's on the bench, so Adele McMahon's on the bench. So, you know, proven again, you know, Scott Beaman, he doesn't mind shaking things up and going against the grain. And putting Adele on the bench, having Niamh as co-captain and announcing a brand new captain. You know, it's very interesting, and it just gives a snapshot of what's going on inside in camp. Delighted for Amy Lee.
We should talk a little bit about Erin King and Aoife Wafer here as well. I know when we talk to the players, they like to say, well, there are other players that we can talk about as well. And sometimes we focus too much on these two players. But at the same time, Anna, when you've got two bona fide world-class players in your team and you're previewing the Six Nations, it's just important to remind ourselves that we can be excited to watch this pair over the course of the next five games, and they really are both something special.
Definitely. And, like, you know, if there are players that want to get, you know more notice and more talked about, then they've got to, like, chase down the others and get that competitiveness going, which is happening. But, like, chasing these world-class players and wanting to be as good as them, and those girls setting the example, that's what camp needs. You know, that's what's driving on the performance of this squad is players like that, like, literally going absolutely crazy to get those performances in, to get a jersey. That's what we need. That's what every team needs. And, like, when we look at, you know, Wafer at eight, I was wondering, is she going to switch back to flanker for defence, which is what she's been doing in the last kind of year? So, in which case, the 6, 7, 8 back row, the numbers and the jerseys don't really matter, because, again, Beaman is managing that, and Wafer might go to flanked for defence. So she's up first in the defensive line. And then you've got Erin King there as well. Like, it's funny when, you know, Adele McMahon, like, such a quality player, is being, you know, kept on the bench by such an amazing, strong back row. And you've got Brittany Hogan in there as well, don't forget. If Ireland can beat France, and if Ireland can kind of keep up their performances, like, there's no reason why there aren't going to be nominees for Player of the Year this year in a World Cup year. Like, and, you know, they can absolutely go for it. And what Fiona said there a minute ago about belief, that belief hasn't been there for a long time. Like, that is so strong. And those players will have that belief. And then the girls who are training alongside them will think, like, jeepers, she's getting nominated or she's being pipped for a player of the tournament, player of the match, player of the year. Like, I know I can be just as good as her. Like, that's an exciting time for those players.
And Aoife Wafer's position in the back row is fascinating, because I know sometimes last year she would have worn a flanker's jersey but lined up at number 8 at scrum time, and I'm not sure, was that a reaction to the new scrum laws that allows your number 8 to just have a bit more autonomy on the back of the scrum? But what's your take on the best constellation of the amazing talent they have in that back row, Fiona?
Yeah, look, I mean, they're inundated. You know, we talk about Erin King and Aoife Wafer, deservedly so. I mean, Aoife Wafer is an absolute joy to watch. But what people forget about as well, and I know the players involved in camp and you see it as a coach, is it's the cohesion of those three players together. So Brittany in there is absolutely huge, right? So if you look at her work rate around that ruck area, how she clears out, the efficiency of that, that leaves Aoife Wafer to be an absolute menace in carrying, in getting over the gain line. Also, the flip side of things in defence, this Irish team, the back row in particular, are outstanding at tackle. It was an interesting stat, Owen, as well, that I read, is that Ireland actually have probably the lowest defence rate, so maybe the most missed tackles, but they have by 25 tackles they're ahead of everyone on dominant tackles,
right?
And I think that's a very unusual stat. They had 95 dominant tackles last year, 25 ahead of any other nation, and I think that back row in particular are immense at that. Niamh Jones has to be included in there, but you have to look at the cohesion of the three of them together, their work rate, how they play off each other. And certainly Anna spoke about her going into that 8 last season. It's also, we know Brittany, I've seen her, she's played Celtic Cup at 8. You can also change that picture as well. So if you have even if you move Brittany into 6-7, or you move that around, if you have a big ball carrier that Aoife Wafer and the French and the English and everyone's analysing, that there is always going to be a little bit of space either outsider or insider, especially off the back of that scrum, because they're going to want to get out and be a dominant hit and stopper from that offloading game. So I think it's very, very clever. She's down at 8. You might even see Brittany carrying at 8 as well at times. It just changes up the picture for defence. And I think Scott is brilliant in how he's doing that. He's naming her there. We've seen it. But now by naming her number 8, we know he's telling the French, we've got a big ball carrier there. And, you know, as I said, they can change that picture up throughout the game also.
And those stats, are they from the Six Nations last year or the year as a whole?
No, just from last year's Six Nations, right. Thing. It's I thought the defence was quite good. We know when Hugh Hogan came in, it changed up. It got absolutely brilliant. I mean, that Australia game in particular up in Belfast, I thought they were absolutely astounding. Hugh Hogan just added a little something to it. But what I will say from last year's Six Nations, there was a couple of holes here and there, and there was a couple of missed tackles, but a dominant tackles was absolutely brilliant by Ireland. They were collective in when they did it, and it was just some big name players making huge hits. And a lot of time, especially at that level, you see, you know, in defensive systems, it's rare. Niamh O'Dowd is another player. It's rare that players would break the system to get up off the line and make an individual huge hit, but Ireland certainly backed their defence that they're able to do that and shoot out to make those big hits.
So the defensive philosophy of this Ireland team is go hard or go home, basically.
Yeah, and I think, as I said, it had improved, and then we saw Hugh Hogan come in at the back of that Six Nations, and you can just see it's far more cohesive. So I think how they go, yes, they're hard, they're coming up, they're backing one another. As I said, you'll see it, they have a license almost to leave the line to make those hits. But I think that's got to do with the connections and knowing the players around you. So he's just, it's go hard, it's get up in your face, but it's also, you can see how intelligent they are when they get to those wider spaces, and they're not shooting up. So it's knowing where and when, and I think that's where he's really improved in these players, in the decision making around that, especially at wide.
The kicking game in this fixture was fascinating last year, Anna. Do you expect a similar tactical approach from both sides?
I do, yeah. Dan O'Brien, you know, it's going to be interesting again to see how far she's come on. And her kicking game has just added an extra element to our Irish rugby that we haven't seen in a while. And when we look at, like, who's covering that, so there's a 6-2 split on the bench. Like, there's, you know, we've got Enya, Avian Riley and Enya, like, covering the backs. Are they going to keep Dana there, or is that just going to be how it's going to play out? Is she going to be expected to play the full 80? And then on the opposite side with France, like, it's chained, like, so Arbez, she's young, she's only a few caps, very good player for Bordeaux. She's, I think that'll be her license as well, like, get in behind them. Both teams will be ferociously looking for space, and like any kind of slip, I feel like the vision on both sides is going to be constantly looking in behind, and what kind of threats the back three will pose on each side. And then if that's the case, the coming up in defence, the volume, the speed of coming up in defence on both sides is going to be massive.
For sure. I think it was 45 long kicks in total from the hands last year in this fixture, so we can expect more of the same this weekend. There's a load of different things that I want to ask you, certainly about where the individual form lines are at for some of these Irish players, because I know it's a big talking point at the moment. What we might do is you might take a quick break and get into that after the ads.
The Six Nations on Off the Ball
with Bank of Ireland, a proud sponsor of Irish rugby. Never stop competing.
The Six Nations on Off the Ball
with Bank of Ireland, a proud sponsor of Irish rugby. Never stop competing.
Welcome back. Anna Capeless and Fiona Hayes are with us on the line previewing this year's Women's Six Nations. It is Ireland against France this Saturday at 1 o'clock in Belfast. And Fiona, one of the big talking points coming into this year's tournament is just that it's hard to know where individual form lines are at for Ireland at the moment. I think, Anna, you actually pointed it out in your Rugby Pass column that there are only five players playing in Premiership Women's Rugby at the moment, which is obviously the top level of the game, you could argue, in club terms in this part of the world. So despite the fact that I'm sure there are tons of brilliant performances in the Celtic Challenge, and like you see some of the scorelines, like the Wolfhounds within the Edinburgh team, 102-0 a couple of weeks ago, I'm sure players are playing out of their skins within those confines. It is difficult to predict how they will do when they go up against world-class opposition in certain positions this Saturday, Fiona.
Yeah, spot on. But I think the good thing about this group, from what I've seen from them, is, and we've seen it at WXV as well, some of those girls mightn't have played a lot of rugby on the pitch beforehand. Yes, you talk about the Celtic Cup, but even last year there might have been a lot of rugby. But for some reason, when they get into that camp, that arena, he's doing wonders in how he's training them, how he's coaching them, how he's getting them physically able for these games. Because I've seen it in the WXV. XV to the girls just going out on the back of that Australia game, as I spoke, and putting in huge performances. But at no time did I actually question even the scrum. I thought the set piece improved. As I said, Ireland were finished sixth overall in line out success for the Six Nations, so we saw a jump in that in WXV, so there was a change there as well. So look, I think it's hard to tell, but from what I'm hearing, the camp, the environment, how things are done up there, even my myself as a coach, not getting players released because they're being so physical up in that camp, or they're playing those internal games, it shows that they're really focused on that, and they're all professionals. And a couple of years ago on, I probably would have said, yeah, I'm not too sure. But in speaking to people involved in the environment, they're able to lift it to another level, and they're able to train at that high ability. Yes, games are always huge, but I think that internal training games, now that there's huge competition there between back rows, props, everything, it just adds to that experience. Personally, you know, the Celtic Cup, there was certainly score lines where I said, look, why can't you just look at our league at home? I mean, it's the same difference, invest in that. But when you watch it and watch, and that's what the coaching staff would do, would be looking at those individual performances for the girls they're interested in and really, really focus when they get into camp. So I've heard great things. I've heard that they're playing, they're training with some French songs and noise and everything in the background. Holly Davidson is refereeing. They have Holly's voice shouting at people, hands away. So look, I feel like they're really focusing in on that match, and stuff like that is added to that environment of intensity and that kind of camp, getting everyone up to that physical aggressive level. And to be honest with you, Owen, over the years, with this French women's team, Anna might agree with me, I think they generally start tournaments a little bit slow as well. They peak at the end. So Ireland will be looking at getting France in that first game is huge for them, because if you look at those games and look at the performances in the last, yes, you have to look at, what is it, 6 years, 2017 was the last time Ireland won. 6 years, they've lost by more than 20 points in each of those games over the 6 years. That is there. But if you look at French performances in those opening games, certainly Ireland would have reviewed that in the last couple of years and thought they have to strike with the ground running and really go after France and put them in pressure situation.
Anna, what's the conversation like in France with regards to the rate of development of players and whether or not they're in the right place? Because you look at their squad for Saturday, all 23 are playing in France, which obviously suggests that the league is super competitive and it's only going in one direction.
It's a funny question, and I actually was thinking about it there while Fiona's talking, but like, do you know, we'd be giving out about the Celtic Challenge. I certainly, last year, for example, I was giving out about the Celtic Challenge thinking this is not going to develop our players enough. You know, when you look at Scotland and Wales outsourcing to the Premiership, and that's just such a stronger league, and how on earth are we going to be prepared? And then because of what Fiona was just talking about, obviously they got it right and they did it. They did the work hard enough in camp to prepare themselves. So although I almost feel the same about the Celtic Challenge this year, I've the trust is there that the work is going in camp, and maybe because the games are slightly easier, you can actually go that little bit harder in camp. But like, it's normal for us to be kind of given out about the way things are done, and I'd love to see the AIL used a bit more, exactly as Fiona said, and I'd love to see things done a little bit differently, and given out is very, very normal. So I can promise you one thing, the given out in France is the exact same. Everyone does be given out about, they're only interested in the top certain, you know, if you look at the clubs like, you know, Bordeaux, Toulouse, Montpellier, one from Lyon, there's a few small from Blagnac, like they feel like not enough of the talent is being scooped up and they're missing out on certain players. Like I hear that a lot, like, oh, sure, they're only interested in Bordeaux and oh, they're only interested in Toulouse. That it's the same giving out, and like giving out is what makes progress as well. You know, that's how you do get them to turn around and notice other, you know, unless you're throwing your hands in the air and making a fuss about a player who's not being seen, how does that player be seen? So the Elite One competition. So obviously I play in Elite 2. So I haven't got to play with these players, but I've seen a few of the matches and it's good. Very, very scripted, I find. A bit more scripted than you might imagine because of this whole notion of like French flair, which I don't know if I said this on Off the Ball before, but like I think French flair is an absolute myth. I think it's just, I just can't understand where this French flair. I actually think that French flair is a combination of panic and just good handling skills, because actually French rugby is so heavily scripted that, and this goes the same all the way up to Elite One. And when it gets to the international gates, I'm not sure how scripted it is there, but I know in clubs, it's kind of the coach's way or the highway, and it very planned, not very free. But it seems to, you know, there's such a massive player pool, and like you see the work that goes on kind of underage here, it's massive. The participation is massive. So obviously they're going to find amazing players. the fact that they don't come from the whole way across the board maybe helps them out a bit. There's a good bit of connection there, like a good few Bordeaux players in the back line, you know, they'll help each other out. Across the front row, Bordeaux players, like it's not one player from every club across all the positions, which then is harder to bring together. So it's probably, you know, with that in mind as well, to using that word cohesion that Fiona used, they need a bit of that as well. So it's the same giving out on all sides of everything. So
yeah, it's that parallel is quite interesting. Could I ask Anna, just in terms of your own season so far, I know you're out injured at the moment, what's that been like for you over the last little while, watching things develop while you've been stuck on the sidelines?
So much of what we want to do can seem impossible, but the highest achievers among us are the people still reaching for something. The ones who aren't satisfied to stay where they are and want to keep climbing higher. It's those people who approach the impossible and embrace it. There's a vehicle for people like that. It's called the Defender. The Defender is an icon reimagined through thoroughly modern design. It's got a tough, rigid body design and durable, lightweight monocoque architecture for extra strength. With precise detailing and compelling proportions, the exterior of the Defender is designed with integrity. This is a vehicle capable of great things, engineered to meet challenges head-on with an exterior that's been tested to the extreme. Experience the Defender's legendary capability off-road and on. And there's a family of vehicles for Defender. Meet the Defender 90, Defender 110, and the 8-seat Defender 130. So, are you ready to embrace the impossible? Explore the Defender at LandRoverUSA.com.
Cheers to a great day and this ice-cold Corona.
You know what would make this day even better? My grandma's carne asada.
Throw in some music.
We can watch the game. Or we could keep it simple.
Corona, la vida más fina. Get your Corona at ordercorona.com. Relax responsibly. Corona Extra Beer, imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
There are some things in life that just shouldn't be forgotten, like bringing your keys when you leave the house, setting your fantasy lineup, and most importantly, having Hidden Valley Ranch to watch the game. Especially if wings are on the menu. Those creamy, zesty, cool ranch flavors take each spicy, savory bite to an unforgettable level. Hidden Valley Ranch, only serious about flavor.
It's time to have your high five moment with High Five Casino, the top social casino where the action and real prizes never stop. Fun spins and big wins are right at your fingertips with over 1,000 games, including High Five Casino exclusives. High Five Casino is always free to play with free coins given out every 4 hours. Sign up today for a free welcome offer that can get you spinning and winning right away. Visit highfivecasino.com.
High Five Casino.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. Must be 21 years or older. Terms and conditions apply.
I find the season here very frustrating because it's very long, and I think it's unnecessarily long because then you've got a lot of breaks in between games. So you might have one game in a week off, two games in 2 weeks off. So I find that the training load in general really hard to manage, because when you have a week off, you've got to push a bit harder. It's really hard to kind of gain momentum across games. So I've missed a handful of games, but for that reason, I don't feel like I've missed a huge block, because that momentum is so hard to keep. But like I'm a coach. I do a little bit of like player coaching stuff. So I've been like standing in, like making sure that I'm not coming back. If touch wood, I'm. It's still unclear for me if I'll actually get to finish out the season, because I've quite a long symptomatic concussion symptoms now going on for a while, so don't know if I'll get to finish the season. But I want to make sure that if I do manage to come back, then it's not going to be new for me, and I'll have contributed, and the girls, I'm going to be turning around being like, oh, Anna's back again, like I want to be there and they're hearing my voice and I'm contributing to the team environment. So it hasn't been easy, but it is what it is for now.
Was it a big moment where you knew that you were in a spot of bother when the injury happens, when the concussion happens, or was it one of those more innocuous concussion incidents?
It was definitely innocuous when it happened initially, but the effects were kind of a little bit scary for me, because I'm lucky. I never had a concussion this bad in my career. So I've made it almost 19 seasons without, a concussion this bad. So just as I announced, that I'm going to hang up my boots, then, bang, you kind of, like, I must have jinxed myself somehow. But it was shocking, I suppose, that like I couldn't do anything. I had to sit in my apartment. I had to take work off. Like I could, it was really, really bad reaction for me. But thankfully, like I know everyone reacts differently to concussion. I know for me, like thankfully, I wasn't affected emotionally. I know some people get really, really down. Thankfully, I didn't, and I've been able to just kind of keep going. And I know I'm not going to play unless I'm 100% right. You know, the first thing everyone says is, oh, you've got to look after yourself first. I'm like, yeah, don't worry. That's why I feel like this I could have already played my last game, because I know I'm not going to play if I'm only 90% better. And I'm definitely still only at 90% after like coming up to 7-8 weeks now. So, it's been okay. I've been trying to see the positive side of it. But if the reality comes that I have finished, I think that's really sad. When I think about that I may have already finished my career and I don't know it yet, I get very, very sad.
Yeah, it's a tricky thing not being able to go out on your own terms and for it to be completely unexpected. Is there a part of you that's trying to keep your hand in with the coaching at the moment, because rugby is such an important part of your life and you can't just give up on that?
I've known for quite a while that I wanted to stay in coaching. Like,
right.
I know too much.
Yeah.
They can't get rid of me now. my mom was a tennis coach. I was always like kind of her assistant growing up coaching. You know, I'm a teacher. Like, coaching for me is, I love it so much, and it comes naturally to me, and it's what I want to do. Like, you know, I teaching is the side hustle because there is enough money in women's rugby.
Yeah.
But I want to be a professional coach, like exactly like Fiona Hayes. She's my idol.
But that's that concussion, Anna. Don't be telling lies, man.
And can I ask, Anna, like obviously you said there the emotion aspect of the concussion, which a lot of people suffer with, thankfully hasn't been too bad for you. How does it manifest itself when the symptoms do crop up?
So it's a little bit of, it's funny because I'm using the word dizzy, but I don't think dizzy is the right word to use. But it's the only word I know in French to use, which is vertige, which then translates as vertigo, which isn't what I have, but it seems to be the only way I can explain it. But it feels, it's just a little bit of, let's use dizziness for want of a better word. My vision is fine, but it's just, if I'm kind of a little bit too much screen time. I went to Italy at the weekend. I was at the game in Rome, and I had to wear earplugs for the whole thing just to keep the noise level down. But then I was fine. If I'm kind of reading screen time, stuff like that, I get a little bit dizzy. So this is at the tail end of it now. It was as bad as like I couldn't, you know, chop vegetables for my dinner and I'd have to sit down. That's how it was in the beginning, but that has slowly, slowly got better. I've gone back to work, I'm back coaching, back teaching, and I can do that relatively dizzy free. I did a short run yesterday, which is good, like 15 minutes of a run, and I've been fine, but there's still some symptoms there. So with like noise and I tried a sip of beer to celebrate Ireland's win against Italy, and it didn't work. I was like, okay, no, I'm not ready for that yet. So still away from a drink. I hope I can have a pint when Munster comes to La Rochelle. But if I can't, then that's okay too.
And are there kind of, I suppose, little techniques and tips and I guess medical advice that you've had to try and keep the process accelerated?
Not really. Like, right. Yeah, there's loads of tips from different people that I can do. Like, I'm taking creatine. I'm taking, staying hydrated. All these little things that you can do, like breathing exercises and things like that. But actually, the advice is you can't do anything. You know, if you start to get dizzy doing anything, you stop. So okay. I've tried a little bit of training. It's been too much. I've stopped. Try a sip of beer, it's too much, I stop. So that's until there's no reaction, I can't do anything. But there's nothing I can do about that. It's just patience.
Yeah, geez. Well, hopefully it all works out in a rugby sense, even just to maybe get back out for another cameo. But you said at the start that this was going to be your last season anyway. So it's just unfortunate timing, is it?
Yeah, right. It is. Yeah, because I've been kind of frustrated with trying to progress as a coach and really not being able to because I'm still playing. You know, like if I'm with a team, I can't go with them at the weekend because I'm playing. Or if they're training same night as me, I can't be there. So I'm 35 now, I'll be 36 for the next season. Like I think it's time. And it's just, yeah, it's unfortunate timing. Like I was really looking forward to the end of this season. We won the second division last year, but we didn't get promoted. So we lost the playoff. So my big thing to get me like going for this season was like, I want to help this team get up to Elite One. I want to help us qualify. So I'm giving it one more season and I've been really enjoying it. Like, it's almost like your mind's playing tricks and you're thinking like, ah, you could do one more season because I feel really good physically. I feel great. I feel like I was playing really well and I was really looking forward to the end of the season. We have Poe this weekend and maybe Irish listeners will know about Poe because there's been some Irish players that have gone there over the years, but we lost to them. It's the only game we've lost this year. We lost to Poe down there. And they're coming back this weekend. And I was so excited for their game to come back because I was like, I can't wait for them to come back. We're playing in Stade Marcel de Flon. We don't get to play in the stadium all the time, but we're playing there this weekend. And I'm absolutely gutted to be missing this fixture because I was gunning for it. Like I think we can win it. And I'm gutted. But look, maybe it, come May, we'll get to play them in a semi-final or a final, and then it'll have been worth it the time on the sideline.
Right. You are listening to Anna Capeless and Fiona Hayes on the Six Nations Show and Off the Ball with Bank of Ireland, a proud sponsor of Irish Rugby. Never stop competing. Just one or two last questions before you wrap up, just with a focus once again on the Six Nations. Fiona, are there any players to watch that people need to remember the name of ahead of this year's Six Nations? I guess we're all pretty au fait with the Irish players at this point, so maybe the best way to frame this is some individual dark horses to watch out for over the five rounds.
I'm from Ireland, is it?
Or? Ireland or not Ireland, whatever you like, but I think we're probably aware enough of the Irish players at this point.
Yeah, just on that Ireland thing, you've seen, you know, just with, I think people need to keep an eye out on Niamh O'Dowd. You know, a lot of people talk about Linda and that front row, but Linda Zhugang, but she's someone that has been getting better and better and better, came up from Old Belvedere, and she's someone I think people should watch. If you're watching Ireland, we know the back rows. She's a loose head prop. Just keep an eye on her defensively in particular. She's absolutely outstanding. Do you know what? I watched, whether she starts, gets much game time. I know she's in this week, but Kildon is on the bench. But I watched the Premiership a lot over in England. And Emma Singh is someone I'm absolutely amazed by this season. She had a couple injuries. She has a few England caps, but she's not part of that back three in general that you hear people talking about. Abby Dow, Kildon. So Emma Singh for England, she's starting this weekend. Her kicking game is probably one of the strongest I've seen. She plays 15, but she, from the tee, she's absolutely unbelievable. And I suppose keep an eye out for her. And just finally, Anna spoke about her. I think she was away at Sevens Arbaez. So last year, obviously, as well, we didn't see a lot of the girls, I suppose, with the Olympics. To have her in... coming back, keep an eye on that 10 for France. It's been very varied over the last few years. We know Jessie Tremoulier was in and there, and then there was obviously a couple of people in and out. But keep an eye on the French 10, Arbaez, as the tournament goes on. She's someone with brilliant kicking game, but her skill set from hand, her footwork is unbelievable to watch as well.
Anna, yourself, who are you looking out for?
Just looking at the French team here in front of me, Okemba, Seraphine Okemba, she made the difference for France in the Olympics. And I actually reckon like she was left out of the starting lineup in the semi-final. I actually think it cost France. And she's in as a seven. So Ireland have to do a lot of work to look after her. If she gets a bit of space, like she's gone. She's amazing. And yeah, I agree with Emma Singh, one of the best kickers in the game. Fabulous player. Played with her in Gloucester Harpery, like wonderful young player as well. Another one who's getting her debut this weekend is Mia Venner. She played again in the final for Gloucester Harpery the weekend. Good few exciting, you know, it's always a strange one for England when they're starting, you know, their first game. Is like England can kind of change their squad almost every week. And, you know, they can give new caps and they're always finding such fabulous talent. So Singers is one, and Mia Venner is another, Okemba. In terms of Ireland, like, I'm excited to see Fiona Chute get more game time as well. I've been very impressed by her pace, and I've got to back up Fiona's point on Niamh O'Dowd. Like, just watch out for her this again. Like, she's a front row setting the line pace, line speed, like the pace in the defensive line. Do you know, often, like, if someone flies out of the line like that, you kind of have to, you know, tell them, like, hold up a second, you know, you can't just run off like that. But the license she's been given makes the Irish defence, like, just an absolute, like, threat. And I can't, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing that. So, yeah, it's going to be exciting. I can't believe it's the start of another Women's Six Nations. Like, it's just, it's nonstop. More sport.
Very lastly, one word answer here, please. Kingspan Stadium, Saturday. Who's going to win, Anna?
She's our French top.
Ireland. This is the biggest chance we've had in a long time. I'm going to go with the Belfast Kingspan Fortress. Ireland are going to win.
Fiona?
I'm going to say Ireland, Owen. I'll leave it there.
Good. That's what we like to hear. Fiona Hayes, Anna Capeless, thanks a million for your time. Really appreciate it.
Cheers.
Thank you.
The Six Nations on Off the Ball
with Bank of Ireland, a proud sponsor of Irish rugby. Never stop competing.
There are some things in life that just shouldn't be forgotten, like bringing your keys when you leave the house, setting your fantasy lineup, and most importantly, having Hidden Valley Ranch to watch the game. Especially if you're having pizza. Those creamy, zesty, cool ranch flavors take each cheesy, melty bite to an unforgettable level. Hidden Valley Ranch. Only serious about flavor.